Welcome to Talking in Stations. It's an Eve podcast recorded live on INN's Twitch. I am Matterall, and today we're going to talk about the news of the week and review Structures 2.0, talk about Guardians Gala, and a bunch of other things too. So let's actually meet the guests and panel. We'll start with our guests. This is Killaby.
Hi, what's up?
And we have from G-Soul, Tuzzy.
Hey, how's everyone?
All right, and joining me with the discussion today is Carneros.
Good morning.
Keskora.
Hey, all, this is Keskora.
And Ashtaroth.
Greetings, fellow Empyreans. This is Ashtaroth.
All right, welcome everybody to Sunday morning at Eve Online. So one of the things that's tough about going, we've moved our night that we used to do it from Friday to Saturday morning to accommodate European time zone guests. And then we decided later on after about a year of that to move it to Sunday just because our real lives kind of allowed for that. So here we are on Sunday. But one of the problems going Sunday is we go after Meta Show now and we go after Open Comms. And those are both really good shows. So check those out if you get a chance. And so a lot of news is covered by the time it gets to here. So we'll try to cover different territory than they did. But again, they're so thorough that it gets difficult. So we'll do news of the day as much as we can and then incorporate your questions into that kind of stuff. We'll also try to get great guests that can really take us deep into certain issues. And that's what we'll continue to try to do. But first, we want to work with Killaby because he's going to be on his way out pretty soon. So Killaby, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. A little bit tired, but you know, that's what happens when you work.
Let's talk streaming, man. You've started streaming.
Yeah, I started streaming like 10 days ago or something. So it's pretty fun. I'm getting into it. Got lots of stuff to do. And I'm kind of like struggling to find my content, what I want to stream. But, you know, I'll get there. I'll figure it out at some point.
Is the crowd? Go ahead.
It's just a really tricky thing to do because, like, as a streamer, you have to be entertaining basically constantly. And so a lot of games, like, you rely on the game to kind of give you regular something else to pay attention to. That's the reason why streaming works. Eve, because of its unpredictable nature, yeah, it is really, really difficult to create like a good stream.
And you have unexpected things happen, like a child runs up on you and jumps all over you. Killaby, but have the crowds been arriving and stuff?
Oh, yeah, it's been going very well. The support is pretty crazy. I mean, I'm pretty happy with the way it goes at the moment. We'll see where I can get it to. I'm pushing it.
Yeah. You know, we can talk about streaming on a different time, but it's interesting, yeah. But it's a little self-conscious. Let's actually go back into Eve, and why don't you tell us what's going on up in the north where you're FC for NC.?
North is pretty uneventful at the moment, and it did like another thing on the keep star. They kind of just wanted to pause the unanchoring on the hard keep star because I didn't want a horde to pack it up, because obviously horde's moving out of Fade and Pureblind into Geminate.
Well, what's that? Is that a retreat or is that was there a purchase?
We're just shuffling alliances in the north and drones around. It's nothing interesting really. It's just GOTG is expanding. They're going to take Fade and Pureblind, and horde was a little bit too cramped up in Fade. So they're getting Geminate, which is probably, like, in my opinion, is a way better region for it. They have more space. They have proximity to Losec, proximity to Jita, which Fade was also, but it's even closer. And they have plenty of people nearby they can brawl with, like drones and stuff. So it's a very, very good move for Horde. And it's just kind of shuffling stuff around in the north. It's not too interesting.
This was interesting because it came up a couple of weeks ago and we didn't cover it, but Blades of Grass was a part of Guardians of the Galaxies, and they've broken off or were kicked out. I don't actually know which. I wanted to get in touch with them. I haven't been able to. On their way out, are they getting picked off? Tuzzy, you were mentioning something about that?
Yeah, it's been pretty funny to watch that drama unfold. In fact, I think I saw something about it on Reddit just this morning, and that there was, I'm not sure who posted it because I don't recognize the name. I don't know if it was a Guardians of the Galaxy person trying to throw Blades of Grass under the bus. I think it was, because it was pretty hostile towards them, that now that I'm pretty sure they got kicked out,
I don't know why. I just, based on a bunch of things I've seen, it seems like they got kicked out. And if you look at this broadcast that was leaked, it seems like the Blades of Glass leadership were telling their own members to not go on coalition-wide fleets when, like, someone like Snortdragon or someone that coalition block level FC pings out for coalition fleets, were telling them, ignore that broadcast, don't go on that fleet, stay home and continue to ratter mine. And I think it's pretty hilarious that they wouldn't think that GOTG would have spies within Blades that could see their own broadcast and see that, like, hey, we're sending out pings for everyone to come join a fleet, and then Blades are turning around and telling their own people not to do that. It seems pretty naive on their part that they wouldn't think that would get out, and that GOTG may have a problem with them doing that. And I'm sure that's not what caused it. It's probably lots of little things like that added up until they finally said, okay, we've had enough of your shenanigans, get out of our coalition. But if you read the comments in that thread, there's some pretty funny mudslinging back and forth between Blades people and GOTG people. So it seems like there was some bad blood there. And hey, Branch is a great place to turn into renters. Why have a coalition member who's not contributing to your coalition when you can kick them out and rent it out to some puppies and make some money off of it directly?
Yeah, so Mikio Kepler here writes that they were kicked and Skill Yourself posted about them due to some drama in the past.
Yeah, so that would make sense since it's, I think, Skill Yourself that's the one that has been intercepting their moves through the MTO gate, that regional gate that you have to gate through. They killed the other day a Titan and maybe a Super and some Rorquals or something. It was a bunch of some Dreads, I think. It was a bunch of losses of them coming through that gate. And I think it was Skill Yourself that had, you know, a pretty big chunk of Nyxes there waiting for them, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was. Well, you know, Blades of Grass are an interesting group because they used to be Lawn, right? They were part of the Imperium or CFC, and I think they go way back.
Yeah, they were part of Lawn, and they schismed from Lawn.
Or they were schismed.
Yeah, I don't know the details. That was before my time. I wasn't in senior leadership then, so I don't know what the details was with that.
Well, I had lunch with Thoric, and I also talked with people from...
Thoric Frosthammer was the CEO of Lawn after the Vulpines left.
Right. And so he says that there was a revolt inside of Lawn that basically, you know, people didn't want to follow these happy rules that were being made by this couple that ran Lawn. So they schismed and said, you know what, we're going to take over Lawn. See yourself out the door. And so the Vulpines, I think they're a couple, right? They left and they formed Blades of Grass, which is a play on Lawn, if you think about it. And Blades of Grass then, you know, became an enemy to Lawn, of course, because, you know, from their point of view, their corporation, their alliance was stolen from them. But whatever. So years pass, and that's who we talk about when we talk about Blades of Grass. There's some history there that goes back.
They're going to just reform a new alliance called General Vegetation.
Yeah, what is this stuff with my green screen going on, dude, on stream? This looks weird.
Yeah, like, just leave it green. It's fine.
You look like one of the blue glowy holograms from Star Wars, except you're
dude,
green
I'm,
glowy.
I'm ascended. I'm not, you know the Stargate, dude? I'm one of the ascended, dude. I'll go with that one. Right, anyway, sorry.
All right, Killer B, what's NZ up to, even the north or the south? What are you guys doing?
We're just kind of clearing up Pravi at the moment. Today's a big time later today. We'll see how that one goes. I think Pravi kind of announced it as their like final stand, so they kind of want to make their last stand on the Sotillo timer today. We'll see what that means or what we get out of it. But
it's like their final stand behind a rock, kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't really make much sense, anyways, because like even if they defend the Sotillo tonight, we're like. Like yesterday, we killed 3 Asbils, 2 Tataras, 2 Fortizars. Like we're just now with the Citadel 2.0 stuff, we're just killing shit left and right. So yeah, like whatever. I'm kind of hopeful we get a fight tonight. So that's why I'm
kind of excited
about it. If you
killed that many yesterday, that means they were unfueled and they never bothered to change the default Vuln timer.
There were a bunch of people, a bunch of Citadels in Pravi that didn't fuel them. That weren't fueled, and we obviously reinforced them on day one of the patch, because why not, right?
Oh, you'd be surprised how many.
Oh, no, I saw Z-Kill yesterday.
Yeah.
There were a lot.
Yeah. Well, we'll go right into that in just a minute. Real quickly.
Really
Yeah, there's not things that are happening or things that have kind of been expected. I don't see many surprises. Is there anything to talk about in DRF Triumvirate War? It looks like that's over and Innsmouth has been cleared out of Tri. DRF's coming in probably to rent the place out.
DRF is XX is XX is taking in Smother and Horde is taking Geminate because XX used to live in Geminate before, right? So they're not exactly going to rent it. They're going to make it their like home region, and then Geminate's going to be, you know, maintained by Horde. Let's put it that way. I think the conflict is mostly over. I think it's kind of hilarious how people are like, oh, Tri's dead or whatever. They haven't really lost much like combat strength. They're just going to regroup and kind of free themselves of the shackles of Zoth, but you know, obviously it's going to hurt them some. They're probably going to lose some members a little bit, but generally I think they're going to be fine. But yeah, the general war over there is probably over. I think it's pretty clear to Tri. I think Garz made a post on Reddit or like a post on the Tri forums like a week ago that got leaked to Reddit. They're going to regroup and then look at whatever, you know, what other content they can go for. Yeah, pretty expected, to be honest, after the Keepsa died. That's usually how these things go.
Yes, it does feel like a conclusion that was supposed to happen. So you probably see Tri fight some fights in the near future in that area to at least harass DRF. But, you know, I think if we look around the map, things are just kind of following their natural courses. I think the one thing that surprised people was why would Horde move? And I guess that was a natural move because they needed more space.
Yeah, Fate is, I mean, Horde is large, right? They've got over 10,000 players or characters at least.
On paper, yeah.
Fate is a small region, and it's a shitty region at that. I'm surprised that they stayed at Fate as long as they did. Geminate should be a pretty good move for them, and it adds the benefit for NC and PL of having a nice big buffer feeder alliance on either side of them to protect their renters to the north.
Well, they're in more than one place, right? Because we have a lot of Horde presence in Cloud Ring, too.
That's... Okay, if you call TCUs on a map having a presence, I don't really... Yeah, that's...
Well, and Horde's still close to, you know, Jita and markets that their guys need, and I believe
they have all of the... They either own all of the market citadels and perimeter, or they have agreements with the people that do to basically give them, you know, protection money. And so for them to be able to continue to show up and defend those when they get attacked, Geminate is a lot closer. It's a lot easier for them to get there on short notice.
It's a good move for them. All right. What's Test up to? Or as people like to call them, Tappy. And Tappy
somebody in Twitch had asked, can you ask Libby why Tappy wasn't coming to help Pravi? I mean, so it's pretty straightforward. When Test had like an alliance update, like 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, and they basically had like five or six different campaigns in there, right? So they're like involved in multiple fronts right now. And it seems like right now the focus for Test and UGZ is the push versus Red Alliance. So they're kind of mostly focusing on that. And also, I feel like, you know, when the ally, you're supposed to be supporting EVAX, the region, you know, how much effort do you really want to put into his defense anymore? Because clearly, if you EVAC, you're already given up. So. Yeah, I guess that's the best reason why Tappy, you know, won't. I mean, they're gonna help them tonight. Tappy's gonna show up tonight for the Sotillo fight, probably, and you know, we'll see how that one goes. But that's one commitment out of like on one day on a weekend, right? That's not gonna help them in the long run. So I think it's just mostly that Test has their own things to do at the moment, and Pravi is a little bit low on their priority list. And also to keep in mind that the campaign commander, the Great Red Salad, was in charge of the Pravi defense, obviously has been kicked or, you know, has retired from the game. So without the ratting salad himself, you know, Pravi's in a dire state right now.
That's a lot. I thought he was somebody else. I mean,
he was an FC in CO2 that joined the post casino war, had a big Gurgoons attitude because he was a guest on the meta show back in late 2016, in which he was like just seemed like itching to start a fight on comms. When the January catch war kicked off with CO2 and Test first moved down to catch, we had dropped some Fortizars in catch and basically communicated to Test, it's you guys can move down, but we are 100% hostile to CO2 and we don't want CO2 moving down. And about Well, the next day when they started online, Rat Salat had formed a bunch of fleets for CO2 and attacked those Fortizars, which basically kicked off that war. At some point during his stay in CO2, he pissed off enough people in CO2 and he was either kicked or quit or whatever, went to Test. Seems like he did the same thing in Test. And on his way out the door, tried to come to Goons, and we basically said no. Then he tried to go to NC, and NC turned him down. And then he made a post on Test forums saying, well, I'm busy with life and stuff like that, and I need to step down. And then PGL replied and said, no, you're not busy. We're kicking you. Quit lying. And it was pretty funny.
Well, so that's a lot. Go ahead.
I was just saying, he burned so many bridges with so many groups. Like, you can't keep doing that and expect you're not going to develop a reputation where no one wants to play with you.
Well, I guess before he ended up with Providence lately, like even back in 2012, he was one of the guys in Northern Coalition that incurred into the Russians, that made the Russians mad, that actually brought the end of Northern Coalition. And we're talking about the original Northern Coalition, not NCDOT. So a lot of people try to kill Northern Coalition, but Rat Salat actually angered the Russians, and the Russians were the ones that actually killed off Northern Coalition. So he goes back. He's been an FC a long, long time. So it's interesting to hear his name associated with Providence and trying to defend it against a PLNC.
I think that's one of those really awesome things that makes Eve, because this guy has this legacy, right, that we can track and follow. He's made a name for himself, even if that name is...
One server, one history. One server, one history. You can't run away from a name. But now you can, take all the mind goo out and put it into a different character or whatever, but it's not the same thing.
Maybe. You're still you, right, though.
Yeah, that's true. But, all right, well, good. Thanks, Killer B. If you have to take off to do anything, that's fine. I wanted to move.
I'm good. I still have like 30 minutes.
Oh, great. Well, hang around. Let's talk about other stuff, too. We've been through Pravi and the Imperium and botting. We're not going to cover that now because actually, and this will be an announcement at the end of the show too, we're going to have the security team from CCP on next week, and we can talk to Guard and Peligro and the other guys from the security team about real security issues, including how to protect your account. Maybe we'll get into botting. We'll feel it out. But Mitani made news by getting quoted as saying, don't be a goon fucker. To say it quickly.
I have to say, you should understand the context around that.
I do, but go ahead.
First of all, the Riot Rick of Slice is the one who made the video and posted it on his personal YouTube account, and he selectively took, there was 10 minutes of audio around that whole topic, and he chopped out half of it and then selectively edited it to take it out of context to make it seem like Mitani was saying something that he wasn't.
Who is that guy, and what's his motivation?
I don't know. He just seems to have a part on for hating us.
Isn't he one of the beekeeper guys?
Yeah, I think he's runs the Bee Control Discord or that group.
And for those that don't know, Bee Control is a group that makes it a point to stage and attack Goon Swarm and Delve to try to make mining a hard thing to do. So they attack Rorquals and they attract that kind of stuff. Basically the money side of Goon. So
yeah, and they've pretty much... There's just not happening anymore. They stopped doing that about a couple weeks ago. Anyway, he then was using his own Reddit accounts he would post and then log into another Reddit account and write a comment and log into another Reddit account and write a comment. And we were watching, we know exactly which ones are him, and we called him out on it. And magically, all those accounts stopped posting. We also know that he was specifically pinging out on Bee Control to get them to brigade it and upvote it. And then the other thing, kind of separate from that, is we had a newer guy within the coalition who I'm not sure. I think he came from Serenity. I think maybe one of the Chinese players. And I'm not sure if it was like a language issue because English isn't his first language or what the deal was, but he was telling us that he was reporting members of his own corp to CCP for multi-boxing. Not like multi-broadcasting or anything, just multi-boxing. It's like, that's not against the rules. you shouldn't be on a vigilante crusade trying to report your fellow goons for something that isn't even against the rules. Please stop doing that. And completely coincidentally, some random guy asked on the fireside chat, like, should we report bots? And Matani kind of went off on the guy because
so he was already mad about the issue.
Yeah, he was mad about this other issue, and he was like, please don't report your fellow goons because you're not a developer. You don't really know whether they're botting or not. What may look like to you botting may be some random guy just ratting. And we've had such a bad experience in the past with CCP banning people for stuff that we know that they weren't breaking the rules. Like Asher a couple weeks ago was on a fleet. He wasn't the FC of the fleet. Just was happened to be in local on that fleet, and someone reported that they were using like the thing where you drop cans on a gate to decloak people, and someone reported Asher as being the FC of that fleet, and Asher received a warning, and Asher's like, I didn't do anything. I didn't drop the cans, and I wasn't leading the fleet. So why are you, you know, we just have such a bad experience with CCP over the years of people getting banned for stuff they didn't do. Or back when we lived in Declan, there was a guy named Odell. I'm sure some of you guys may be familiar with Odell. And Odell, he didn't even use his boxer. He was very, very fast with just alt-tabbing between bombers to launch his bombs. And he was very good at lining them up on a gate and waiting for MOA to send a Cormorant, like Erebus Silent Kill, good old Erebus Silent Kill would send a Cormorant fleet up through Declan. And sure enough, Odell would bomb him like he does every other day because Erebus Silent Kill is horrible. And every single time MOA was mass reporting Odell every single day, mass report. And finally it crossed some GM's desk who I guess didn't check on it and just said, oh, I don't know. We don't know why he did it. We don't know if the GM was like, I'm sick of getting these reports or I'm not going to bother checking. And they banned him for 30 days. And Kunmi submitted ticket after ticket after ticket, took video showing how he did. It's like, look, I don't ISBOX. I don't multi-broadcast. I'm not guilty of doing what you say I'm doing. And the ban stuck. So we have no faith whatsoever in GMs actually making right calls and not getting false positives and banning people for stuff they didn't do. So our policy always has been, you know, it's if CCP wants to make a rule that you shouldn't do that, then they need to enforce their own rules. And please don't be a vigilante reporting your own players because it could get someone banned that, for something they didn't do. And then Riot Rick recorded it all, selectively edited up the video, posted on Reddit, and made it sound like Matani was in favor of botting. And then brigaded up Reddit post after Reddit post after Reddit post for a week.
Yeah, there's different threads going on too.
Yeah.
But hold on. So you're refuting that Guard, because Guard said, hey, look, Matani, we don't really punish anyone until we prove they've done it. So don't worry.
Yeah, I'm refuting it because Guard's wrong. There's in fact, there was a post the very next night made by Riot Rick's people that was brigaded up. And then we got in the comments and told story after story after story of that not being true. And Guard never really responded to that.
Well, maybe we can ask him next week. But Ash, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I guess. So if all of this is just some sort of misunderstanding, wouldn't it be relatively easy to clear up the position? Like, so the Imperium are in a very tricky position, and regardless of, you know, what's going on or any history, like as the clear leader of all industrial NullSec empires, like every single time the reports come out, it's very clear that Goonswarm and the Imperium are being more industrious than the other empires. So that lends itself to accusations of things like botting and whatnot, or at least makes those accusations far more destructive. So as a leader of that organization, I would think that you would want to do the exact opposite. You would want to present a very much like, no, we are not those other people that have come before us, that we've, because that's the other thing. This comes straight out of kind of old school Goonswarm playbook to use things to kind of, you know, to bait people into doing things that would allow them to be reported or just reporting them for things that would get them, you know, undermined, you know. And so I would think that it would behoove the Imperium to kind of take the stance of, no, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're policing our own. We want to be the legitimate empire.
Here's why.
So I would think that you would speak directly to that and say, what is the standard for the Imperium and make sure that that standard is high.
Ashrathi, can you hear me? Well, like the thing is, then you would be propelled into denying something. by a crowd that you didn't even need to respond to. Like,
yeah, well, our attitude is just to not respond. We're not going to give Riot Rick what he wants and start a drama war on Reddit in which most of the Reddit moderators are actively hostile to goons. And we had you got to understand, we had 10 solid months during the casino war of every single pro goon post that made it to the front page of Reddit would get deleted or shadow banned or removed there's a bunch of mods. Go look at the mod list in our Eve. There's a three or four people that hate us. Durherdur, Gorski Carr, they hate us. And they completely abuse their mod powers to make it so that any pro propaganda posts that make it to the top during when a war or anything very hot is going on, suppress that stuff. So we gave up a long time ago of trying to get our story out because basically our enemies cheat. They make it so that their posts are the ones that make it to the top and stick around for days. If we show evidence to say, look, they're broke brigading, they're like, oh, that's not the case. And if our enemies show, look, they're broke brigading, they're like, oh, they're broke brigading, deleted, you know.
Right. All right.
Well, a couple things about that. First of all, it's worth noting that the Mitanni was actually, Mitanni.com rather, was banned from all of Reddit for a period of time for doing a lot of those tactics as well. So there is a historical precedent that they may be playing to. That being said, I do not disagree that those mods don't like the Imperium. So the accusation has at least some foundational merit.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so Killer B said it for me. Let's move on. We'll come back to this when we talk about Reddit. We may have Reddit mods on here and actually talk to them about actually what's Reddit like these days. I think you'll find it's a lot different than people think. But we do want to move on to Citadel changes. How are you guys finding the Citadel changes that came through just the other day?
Oh boy, Wormholes this is loving it.
Why is that?
Well, so a lot of Wormhole content, even back before Citadels, goes back to structure bashing. I mean, we don't care about territory. We don't care about systems. So a lot of the ways that people would initiate big fights is with structure bashing, with POS bashing back in the day, and now with Citadels. But with the previous changes, Citadel bashing was such a chore because you had to plan on a specific day, and it took 3 days, and it was just such a pain. But now, when we can hit them whenever we want, and a lot of people don't fuel their structures, so people have just been hitting structures left and right just because they can now. And it's so exciting that they had these changes in, because this is a lot of what Wormholes used to be like back in the day, and now we get to do it again all the time. So there have been so many structures dying in Wormhole space. I've been trying to keep up with how many of the structures that have been dying were in Wormhole space, and I lost track because there's so many of them. But when I was checking, it looked like something like 40 to 50% of the structures dying were in Wormholes. There were just so many structures dying in Wormholes this weekend.
And when they die there, they lose all the stuff in it, right?
Yeah, it's 100% loot drops. There's no asset safety in Wormholes. So we've been seeing tens of billions of ISK drop out of Citadels. We ourselves bashed one that dropped over 30 bill. And I know some people are reporting up to 80 to 100 bill in some of the Citadels that drop. And we get all of it. There's no asset safety. You get all of it. So people are just like mad rushing to hit Citadels that are low on fuel. And some of them have spawned some really good fights. You know, we hit one that was like low on fuel and ended up being like owned by someone pretty big. So that started a pretty good fight. And there was one actually, we found other people bashing it and killed them and then took all the loot. So
you know if the big loot drop ones, does that stuff show up on the kill mails?
I don't think it does because it's considered part of the can. It's not right. Like the loot is in the cans. If you blow up the can, it will show the loot. But the actual kill mail itself is just structure plus the fitting.
I follow the Z-Kill Twitter account. So I see a stream of any kills above 10 billion. And I saw some Citadel show up yesterday, but I didn't see the degree you're talking about. So I figured they must not have the loot calculated.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, because it's considered the can's loot. And we don't want to blow up those cans. We want that fucking loot. Like, we've been just, it's been great. It's been so much fun because then we're running into so many groups. Like we were running through HiSec yesterday, and we have a lot of the other wormhole groups set red so we can recognize them in local. And we're seeing tons of them running around HiSec and DSTs because they're all hidden structures too. So there's been a lot of activity, and it's been awesome. It's been a lot of fun. This is what we wanted out of Citadels to begin with in wormhole space.
Somebody posted this link. I think it was on Reddit. And then like the top comment was, you need to be listening to the Red Alert, that old Command & Conquer Red Alert, the Death March music in the background while you scroll through all of the Astrahus is dying.
Oh, there's a ton of them. It's just nuts. And it's been fun. It's a lot of fun, not going to lie. Because we're just like, ooh, it's like a surprise. Like, what are we going to get when we pop it? You know, it's like, yeah. Yay.
So everyone should know the significance of yesterday was pre-patch. CCP went ahead and made it so you could go ahead and set the new vuln windows post for post-patch. And by default, they picked Saturday at 1800 Eve. So anyone who's not fueled their structures, who's abandoned it, maybe they're AFK from the game, maybe they dropped this thing a year ago, all of those who got reinforced post-patch all became vulnerable on their final timer yesterday, plus or minus 2 hours from 1800 Eve. That's why you saw the massive holocausting of Citadels all over the game.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So did anybody count on, because you forget that this stuff drops the loot, so you get to, anybody count on all these pinatas showing up in wormhole space? Like that seems like a gold rush.
I mean, we kind of expected some of it. I mean, as soon as the patch was announced, like when I was at Vegas and like my entire corp that came, it was like 12 of us or something. We were all sitting in a row and they announced these changes and we all were just like, yeah, Citadels, we can hit all the time. And some of this, you know, reminds us back in the days of passes, because when we lived in wormholes with passes, fuel was so important, because if you didn't fuel your structure and the bubble went down, your structure, all your assets were completely vulnerable. There was no way for them to be defended, really. So this is kind of calling back to that, because we used to find passes that were not fueled and pop them and they'd be, you know, 10 bill or something like that. But with Citadels, you know, anyone that comes, that joins that corp, puts their stuff in the Citadel and then leaves, that stuff is still there. So it's constantly making these bigger and bigger and bigger loot pinatas the longer they've been around. So we know that since they've been out for so long, that a lot of these Citadels are going to have tons of assets just locked away in them, because that character is no longer active in the wormhole. And there's no way to, like, you know, port your stuff out of the wormhole. It's stuck in there unless it gets unanchored or blown up. So we just figured we're just going to start hitting all the structures we can, because if anything, it'll generate content at the very least. We'll get some fights. And, you know, best case scenario, we get a fight and tens of billions of loot. So I know a lot of people have been hitting them all over. If they see one that's not fueled, they're just going for it.
What about you, Tuzzy or Killer B? What have you guys been seeing?
We love it because we can now, we had the problem that probably tried to be like really nifty by timing all this stuff for the like Saturday, Sunday at the same time. So we weren't really able to hit it. Now we could sort of, what we did last week was basically we reinforced a bunch of stuff throughout the week and it all comes out on the weekend. So you can kind of like go reinforce something on Tuesday, some on Wednesday, some on Thursday, and you hit them all the next day again. And then they all come out on the weekend and you kind of like have a big weekend of just killing stuff, which is pretty cool. So I'm liking those changes. Not having void bombs is great. I'm gonna call something right here, right now. At some point, people are gonna start like complaining about the damage bombs. Everybody always just complained about the void bombs, but now that they're gone, people are probably gonna start complaining about the damage bombs at some point, because they can get really annoying too.
We shall see.
And that's it, really. And then the other stuff, we'll see how it goes, to be honest. But I'm really happy with the changes overall. Pretty fun.
Let's be very clear. It wasn't just that void bombs were effective. It was that void bombs significantly limited the types of counters that could be used, i.e. basically Mercurials.
Yeah, basically passive tank armor fleets didn't need cap for their tank. But so one other thing, I'm not sure if it's a big deal or not yet. It's probably going to take us months of seeing how things play out before we decide, yes, this is a big deal or no, it's not a big deal. I remember early on, the actual structures team, the original structure team that came up with the Citadel roadmap, the reason they made it so that Citadels didn't auto attack or auto defend themselves like a POS does was because the vulnerability times were so limited in that you could set them at a specific hour block per week. For like an Astro House, it was 3 hours, or Fort Azaria was, I don't know what it was, 12 hours or something like that, 9 hours. You were limited in your vuln time, and thus, therefore, you needed to be there to defend it when it was vulnerable. That was the compromise that was made. Now we've made them 24/7. I could see eventually there be a push from players 6 months from now. Maybe, hey, can we have it, you know, have some limited ability to auto defend itself? I don't know. I have no idea whether it'll be a big deal or not. Maybe it's not. But that was a compromise that was made in the beginning, that they wouldn't defend themselves because of the vuln thing. Now we've went back on the vuln thing and they still don't defend themselves. So they are less effective in that regard compared to a POS. On the one hand, if you keep them fueled, you still got the three timers, so you have plenty of opportunity to show up to defend them if you do want to defend them. I think the other interesting thing is a lot of they also reduce the CPU and grid, a lot of Citadels. So yeah, a lot of the default fits no longer work. We had a bunch of Citadels in which their mod, like say one mod here or there is offline, and we needed to tweak what our default fit for that type was and go back and switch out the fits. Also, now there's Tech 2 mods. There's also now stand-up fighters, Tech 1 and Tech 2. And then there's, of course, the new projector mods. So on patch day, I imagine a lot of people in my role in a bunch of alliances had to go buy the BPOs. We've got them in research. We're starting to get them produced. So that's a thing that's happening behind the scenes all over the game.
Yeah, I think that that's a really strong point about this whole Upwell 2.0 thing, which is that it was a lot of changes all at once that all require the proper response right away by the people, right? Like, we make fun of the people that didn't feel their stuff or didn't have set timers because that was such a big deal. Everybody kind of, you know, anybody who's paying attention or dialed in was kind of doing that sort of stuff. But there's so many little things like the fittings, right? Even now, like just yesterday, we docked into one of our things and it was like, oh, look, a lot of our mods, random mods, are offline because our power grid was reduced. There's just so many different pieces that the chances that something will slip in any given organization is really high right now.
Yeah, we have lots of extra small bombs too now because all the VoIP bombs got changed into small bombs.
Yeah, we have one guy in our alliance that does like most of the structure management, and that guy is just like my like VIP right now, like, oh my god, MVP guy, because he's just been prepping for this stuff for like weeks.
And yeah, we had made the decision when they first announced the whole low power, full power thing. I guess what was that, last fall at Vegas, Vegas?
Yeah, I was at Vegas.
I did some back of the napkin math. I was like, oh, it's only going to be that much to fuel everything. We'll just build cloning modules and then install them on every Citadel. And that's basically what we've been working on for the last couple months. So we had a few that were unpowered, like some Citadels we had left over in Hakonan and other random places really far from Dell. We're like, ah, fuck it. We're not going to go up there and put a cloning module on that one. So we're going to have some that we lose, but not.
But that's your strategy to keep them active, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just, we want to keep the three timers, keep them full power. And hey, we still may not show up to defend them, but at least we have the option.
And so do you find that the chains of people having, Astra Hooses everywhere in order to move up and down the map, do you think those will decay over time?
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna have to. But at the same time, in LoSec, it's trivial to like launch a new one on an alt corp with some random name, and once it gets online, you transfer it to your alliance, and then fuel it and fit it. So we're not too worried about that. If we need to drop a bunch to like go invade Cobalt Edge, you know, it's, as long as we have a week or so notice to do the legwork, we can do it.
Yikes!
One of the things I really like about the low-powered mode is that it turns off all of the lights. So you don't need to hack them. You don't need to do anything. There's a clear visual indicator that there's something wrong and that the structure is vulnerable.
Does it not also say low power too, or is that just for the owner of the Citadel? Because I know the ones I've seen that are low power actually say, when you click on them, say low power next to them. But I don't know. I've not tried it on a non-goon character. I don't know if it doesn't say that for a hostile.
Well, you caught me talking out my butt, because We made sure to fuel all of ours. I just saw the really cool picture of the two oracles sitting in the shadow of the low power master house, and I was like, that is really good.
Yeah, I know it turns off the lights, but I might be wrong, but I think it also says low power for anyone looking at it in space. That may just be for the owner of the structure, but at least for the owner of the structure. It also, in addition to that, in the structure browser, it puts a little like lightning power symbol beside it to let you know that it's offline. And also, they've added unanchor timers to the structure browser finally. So you're no longer having to like do some math of when you press that button. MC would have really appreciated this feature a couple months ago in Syndicate. But now in the structure browser, you can clearly see a little dial around your icon with a timer ticking down of when it finishes unanchoring.
Sorry about the inside jokes. By the way, if you're looking at Killaby mouthing words, he's actually leading a fleet. So it's pretty cool to see what he looks like when he's leading a block level fleet. So, you guys like the changes then, I imagine. You guys are fine with them. You seem to have prepared for the changes. This is going to make the Citadel ownership be a little more difficult if you own one, because it can become a little more vulnerable a little quicker if you're not taking care of it.
Yeah, and they did buff the anti-sub cap capabilities of them quite a bit, and nerfed the anti-capital. And I was playing we've pretty much always kept ours anti-capital fit.
Yeah.
But I was playing with some of the anti-sub capital fits over the last couple of days, and they're surprisingly powerful. I predict there being a anti-sub capital, anti-sub capital. Yeah. I predict there being maybe some whining when everyone figures that out and starts using those fits on Reddit too. Like, they're too powerful. Get subcaps now.
That was the imbalance, right? They were really OP against super capital. Like a super capital fleet wouldn't take one down, but the sub capital thing was really soft. That's what I remember hearing.
Yeah, but I was looking at like a Rotaru, the weakest, puniest little citadel with its one high, missile launcher and one low slot and two medium slots, and I was looking at how much DPS it could do to a single subcap. I was like, that's quite a bit for one launcher. So I imagine like a Fortizar or a Keepstar or something could actually, put a hurting on them.
Well, I like that because, it might get fun to get into the structure and fight back. And it seems to be the scenario that's most likely, a subcapital fleet fighting a structure.
Yeah, Dirk points out in chat here to me that stand-up fighters are available now. All of the citadels that had regular T, most people should have only been using T1 fighters because this was something that I don't think a lot of people realized. If you were gunning a citadel prior to the patch, the citadel did not take advantage of your character's fighter skills. So there was no real reason to use Tech 2 fighter. You're just light waste of money. You should only use Tech 1, and the Tech 1s were pretty weak. With the patch, all the citadels that have fighters no longer work. I'm not even sure you can launch them or not, basically everyone should pull the Tech 1 fighters off their citadels and put stand-up fighters on. The stand-up fighters are bonus to their actual fighter hull as if you had fighter skills. So the stand-up fighters are much better than the old fighters, and now there's also Tech 2 versions, and they pack a significant punch. I was looking at the DPS. I mean, it's like having like a super, like a Fortizar, its fighters are now like having a super carrier on grid, fully bonus, fully skilled super carrier.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. I think that it sometimes gets underestimated how important the Citadel or the structure fight mechanics are, because effectively CCP has created boss fights and allowed us to take on the role of that boss. So if any conflict in EVE could be, quote, fun for both sides, it should be that, right? It should be fun to assault a citadel. It should also be fun to sit in a citadel and be the boss that's messing with people. And as long as that's broken, that shows very deep design flaws. And so I think that this is a good place to continue to tweak on, because I think it reveals a lot of hints about the way that we see combat in EVE.
Well, yeah, and I like that they're trying to balance the problems of the last 2 years. I know people said like it took too long to put a balance pass on these citadels, but I actually think that it takes a long time to figure out like, what the meta is settling at, and then you make an adjustment, and especially for structures, because they're used in so many different situations and stuff. It takes a long time to gather information to figure out how to balance past those things. Right, Carneros? Is that Seem right?
Yeah, we don't have all of ours set up correctly yet either. So yeah, it takes a little while to.
Yeah, but I'm talking about CCP looking at it saying we're gonna make a balance pass, but it's gonna take them a long time to gather enough situational data to say these are the corrections that we would make to kind of fix the ability.
They need a weekend or two. They're gonna come back to work on Monday because they don't have a bank holiday, and they're going to look at all the data from the weekend, and they're gonna get a kick out of the bonanza of destruction, and they're going to giggle over it, and they're going to sit down and have a meeting and say, okay, what's too much and what's not, and they'll go through and they'll have some ideas already.
Keep in mind,
of destruction. I like that.
Keep in mind, the ones that were lost yesterday on Saturday were just the people who hadn't set their vuln timers yet from the default. So there's going to be smaller bonanzas that happen today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, all every day this week of the other blocks that did set their timers and still didn't fuel or had some abandoned set. Like the Imperium, our timer is set for one day coming up this week, and we have some that got reinforced that are abandoned ones, and we're probably going to lose all of those. So that'll be one day all of our kill mails happen. I'm sure PL and NC and Test and all the other big groups have similar abandoned structure somewhere, and they set all their timers to one day, and those are going to blow up sometime this week. So that's going to keep happening this coming week. But I would say probably past this week or the next week, most of all the abandoned ones will be gone at that point.
We had a lot of fun yesterday saving one at like 2% hull in low sec. We showed up just at the last minute with a big pack of garmers.
Any evidence that NPCs are killing anything?
No.
I don't know. The only thing I've seen with those new NPCs is hilariously one of our mini love guys a week or so ago figured out somewhere in high sec or low sec or something, places I don't go, there was one of the forward operating bases, and some of those new rats that will get very aggressive if you haven't killed them for a while.
This is funny.
Yeah, they were figuring out that if you were in this system and you stayed on grid for more than a minute or so, they would warp in on you with a fleet and kill you. And one of the mini love guys figured this out. So he was sitting on the gate, and every time a neutral freighter would come through, he'd just start bumping the freighter until the NPCs came along and killed the freighter. And he kept just doing that over and over and over again. And he got, I don't know, 20 or 30 freighter kills letting the NPCs gank him for him. More unintended consequences. CCP didn't anticipate.
I love that idea though of weaponizing the environment. Like I've done that in other games. It's a lot of fun.
Another instance. There's a guy called Vic Jefferson that does like stealth bomber stuff in Delve all the time, trying to gank the goons. And he started complaining like a month ago on Reddit about, oh, goons are exploiting an NPC Delve. I was like, what is he talking about? And we realized that, so in NPC Delve are all the Blood Raider NPC stations. And the Blood Raider, those new mining rats, the ones that have the smarter AI that they'll actually bring in a fleet to defend their miners with like full logi support and everything. Apparently they had aggressed some, like there were some sitting on the station in the system they were staging out of an NPC Delve, like 318 or PR attack or something. And one of the Vic's guys must've gone, oh, rat, I'm going to shoot him. And they shot him and aggressed him. So then the fleet was like camping their station undock, ganking Vic Jefferson's gang whenever they went undock. And Vic was all pissed off thinking goons had did it. You know, ooh, the evil goon figured out a way to exploit. And we're like, we don't know what he's talking about. We didn't do it.
I know with wormholes, weaponizing the environment, we've been weaponizing drifters for quite a while. For those who don't know about drifter mechanics and wormholes, in class 5 and class 6 wormholes, if you do a combat site, at the end it spawns a structure that if you attack it creates a drifter, and you can kill the drifter and he drops some good loot, or if you don't kill a drifter, he'll just warp off and be in that system for like, I think they added a despawn, but it's like 30 days. It's like a really long time. So you'll find some wormholes that have 20 drifters in them, like they warp to other wormholes, they warp to planets and celestials, and so you got to be careful because you'll see there's some groups that will just spawn drifters just to be a dick and they'll keep them in that system, and someone else will roll in and all of a sudden there's like 15 drifters on top of them, and that's really hard to kill. Like you need a big fleet to kill that many drifters. They're nasty. So in another way, some people figured out that they could anchor an Astor House on a moon or a planet, and the Drifters would warp to that Astor House, and you could kill the Drifters with the structure. And so that was a way that a lot of people farmed Drifters and made a lot of money from it.
It's pretty cool. What's going on with Drifters? Is there something going on with them? Like, Ash, can you hear me?
Like, story-wise?
No, there's something about Drifters, or they're finding Drifters that are very weakened, maybe almost dead. And they're, you know, out in space. So it's not like it's a disease or anything, but maybe some AI is taking them out or something.
Yeah, this was a great story. Ash Tarathi, he's not in the channel right now.
Oh, we need Ash for this, but we'll get him back.
Yeah, because there's something going on quietly in the background with the storyline on the Drifters, and it's hinting at upcoming storyline for Eve.
Now, if and we'll continue this when Ash gets back, since he's the one that knows probably the most about it, but CCP Falcon, who does a lot of lore work for EVE Online, did say that the Drifter story arc was actually written, like it's done. So it was just a matter of progressing it at the right time. So maybe this is a time where they start to sneak in things. And I noticed that with lore stuff, they like to just kind of let it happen and wait for the ripples of people finding out, you know, this thing is happening, get out among the players themselves. They don't actually announce that this is happening. So it's kind of
cool. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we were just talking about Drifters.
Yeah, no, I was able to hear.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay.
So, yeah. So there is some interesting stuff going on. And you do make a big, good point, which is that the Eve plot, when it comes to these kinds of things, doesn't often like get revealed in the way that other video games do. Right. Like, we haven't had a scope video for over a year. We haven't had a chronicle for over a year. But even then, like, that isn't how Eve works. Caroline Starr started because, and is named Caroline Starr because Caroline Grace, I think is her name, saw that one of the stars in the sky was just getting bigger than the others. Right. So CCP allows us to kind of discover as the world changes, right? The world changes as the story progresses, and we know that the story is progressing by witnessing those changes. In that regard, the problem is that sometimes we run into like bugs or things that are maybe not intended to be meaningful. A really good example of that would be a while back, they posted a picture of the Drifter Hive, what we call the pickup sticks, but they posted a picture of it, and we noticed immediately that it was in K-Space. We still to this day do not know whether or not that was like intentional to like let us know, hey, by the way, the Drifters are now in K-Space. What we do know is that we went to the exact system that like we measured the stars and were able to know like this is the system that picture would have been taken in if it was there, and we weren't able to find it. So it's hard to say. In the meantime, what has happened now is about 2-3 weeks ago, we had an event which was timekeeping. Not 2-3 weeks ago, 2 months ago, because it was right at it was right after the new year. The story is that Concord and some other people are trying to fix or make better the way that time is tracked across New Eden. This is again one of those BS things that, you know, sometimes you get talked about. But as it turns out, there's actually three different ideas, factions, about how time should be tracked in New Eden. And so what ended up happening is during this event, another guy showed up from this that seemed to be a reference from this old chronicle about timekeeping. And he was killed, the NPC actor, and his equipment and corpse, I believe, was recovered. But then Concord demanded the remains, the evidence, including a corrupted trinary relic, which is related to the Drifters as per the event from like a year ago. So what that means is now there is also what's called the Sisters of Eve, the Pharaohs of Thera, who often have warned us frequently in the last 6 months or so that there's kind of this darker thing going on. Earlier, they warned us that the SOE were using Drifter technology in order to do like the alphas and stuff like that. They've warned us that the SOE have secret projects with the Drifters, which we actually already knew about thanks to Sinewave Alpha. But they've also now warned us that the Concord is experimenting with a new Drifter weapon. And it was noted by the people that were on scene that drifters did show up right after the event. But more importantly, the drifters did not behave normally. They did not fire their standard doomsday weapon. They did not act the way that we normally interact with the drifters, or they normally interact with drifters. Fast forward to yesterday. I think it was Makoto Priyano's group, ARC, first noted, but then it was quickly noted by two other organizations that, the drifters were clumping together a lot more than were expected in their hives and readouts in their drifter areas, but also they were critically injured. These drifters were at 10% hull, even though they had full shields and whatnot. They had hull damage, their systems were failing. You could see that there was something going wrong. So at this point, there's either a bug in which like NPC interactions or something like that has caused something to happen. Although it's interesting because the damaged drifters are not in areas in which they would be interacting with other factions. You know, they're like in their own holes. So there's no like pirate fobs for them to be being damaged by. So the indication is that something is happening, but it's a little bit too early for us to tell what exactly it is.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Well, we'll expect to hear more from you as that develops. Let's actually talk about another thing that you're involved with, Guardian Gala. Have you guys been doing it?
Oh boy, I'm actually doing it right now.
I saw one in local yesterday on my overview, but I didn't.
That's close. Yeah, this is primarily, correct me if I'm wrong, in high sec, right?
No. Well, okay, so it's all throughout space. The normal sites are spawning in high sec only. And then there are what's called VIP sites, which spawn, I think, predominantly low, but I've also heard that they do spawn in null.
The one I saw was in Delve, so in the middle of Delve, yeah.
So null and low. So high sec is only normal sites, and then the VIP sites can spawn in low and null. Now, CCP Dragon has suggested in the past that they want like low to be the most focused, so it could be possible that VIP spawns more often than low, but it's really tough to tell.
I was in a PvP fleet yesterday in Quarius, and we were sitting around waiting to protect an onlining structure. So we had a few minutes, and there was a VIP site in the system. So the FC says, would you rather just sit here and wait, or would you rather just do something? We're like, something, do something. So we warped into, he said, if you're a little thing, stay off this. Just bring the big stuff. And we're in battleships. And we warped in, and the main enemy was a carrier, an NPC carrier. And we focused it down and killed it. And it wasn't too hard, and obviously in a big PvP fleet. But it was I was giggling to myself because I don't get to see sites like that very often. I don't have time to run ratting sites. So it was a lot of fun. It was cool to bring it down and see what it was like.
It's funny because that story seems to prove almost like what I would expect from all of this. But I don't witness very much. And I don't know if it's just because of our fleets or whatever. But, you know, in previous events or whatnot, we'll be wandering through LoSec looking for kills. And I'll even say, oh, look, there's a site. But there's no impetus to, like, just go there and knock it out real quick. Like, that hasn't entered into the player consciousness. I don't know if it's because of, like, just this, we're doing PvP, therefore anything that's PvE doesn't make any sense. But in my opinion, I think that might actually be a better fleet, right? That's wandering around and you just knock out those kinds of sites real quick as you're going. And then, you know, that might get the fleet something. But people, at least in my experience, have tended to avoid doing that.
Well, it dropped a skin for a Mollus Navy issue. Not a standard doctrine ship that we fly in the Imperium, and not a particularly useful skin to us. But if it dropped one for everyone in the fleet, okay, yeah, we'd probably stop and do things like that because people love skins. People love skins. Not everyone do.
This is the problem with with the whole Blood Raider and what was the other one? Garista's BR?
The Sodios.
The Sodios, thank you. Yeah. There was no reward for, if you formed a big fleet, everyone who went on the fleet would get nothing. No bounty, no nothing. There was just a loot crate at the end, and it was like the Alliance was going to take the loot crate and then turn it into something and then, you know, sell off the product and like a Moloch or something and then divvy up the ISP between the people who ran it. But like, there was no direct reward. So it was hard to get people to even want to form a fleet to go do it.
Sure.
Yeah. And so those, the Gala, if there's just like one loot skin at the end, like, yeah, it's okay for you to do by yourself, but why am I going to form a group of 20 guys to go work on it?
Well, I think, okay, so that's a really good question. I think that what they're working on is kind of how to solve that. And the points in the agency, I think, is the big key. I think that, honestly, the process of, like, what things drop and how they drop is really good, right? Normal sites give skins, which some people want to collect them all. It drops boosters and it drops accelerators, which are worth money. So now running the sites are worth money regardless, as long as you get the drops. So I really feel, and then also just for people who aren't aware, the VIP sites, the reason why they're so cool, they have the carrier, which is a very, very tough challenge, but they can drop the implant, which is a brand new implant, which I'm not sure if a lot of people that aren't paying attention to the actual Gala even realize. There's a new implant which extends webification range, either 3%, 5%, or 7%, depending on the implant. And it does not drop in the normal sites, which means the only way to get this implant is by doing these really, really difficult, dangerous VIP sites or gaining 500 points in the Gala, which is the second highest kind of ask of effort that CCP has ever done in these events. Usually, or at least since they've made it so that you can kind of roll through your tasks, most of the time you could complete, like I think at the last event, people completed it within the same day. They got full points, they finished the whole point thing, and they got the final reward. So I think that now that we've figured out kind of how the events and how the drops should work, we still need to tweak a little bit to make those points work, because that's the reward, right? So that way the entire fleet will still get credit for all of the stuff. And so that's the way to make it so that the fleet feels good about what they're doing.
Well, they do, they need the notification. In EverQuest, we have a little ding that is part of how you know you just got rewarded for something.
That exists.
The ding itself ends up being... I didn't notice any ding when we killed that VIP thing of any points I just got.
So I believe, okay, so I'm further along right now. I think that you have to kill more than one of the final bosses. The two tasks are kill bosses and kill random guys, right? The problem is, so mechanically there's 5 tiers to it. Each tier is harder to do. So like the final tier of bosses is 25 bosses. The final tier of individuals would be 100 individuals. I have found in practice, obviously you get through the 5 tiers of individuals way faster than bosses. But when you do complete one of the tasks, it does pop up in your notification.
That's not enough. It needs some more design work, because if you don't notice you got rewarded, you didn't get rewarded. The perception is important on that. And then you go away and think, I didn't get anything for doing that. Why would I do another?
Sure. The other thing that you could talk about is the fact that the first reward is actually not right away. The lowest point score, I think, is somewhere like 200 right now, it's 100, which is, if you think about it, that's 5 steps. So that's almost 200 individual rats and finishing all of the guardians, which is a lot of people. Or the way it works is that once you finish part 5, it'll reset in 3 hours. But if you don't complete part 5, it only resets, I think, once a day. So if you can like push through all the way to like crash the Gala part 5 and kill all 100 rats, then it resets. That's how I've been able to get more than 100 points in a day. But that requires not only a lot of effort, it's a big ask, but it's actually a big ask over time, because you have to wait for your task to cycle through before you even get your first reward. And what's even worse about that is that first reward is the same thing that drops in the sites. It's just more fireworks. So I think that one of the things that CCP needs to learn is that that first reward that, you know, when you complete, once you complete your first site, you should get your first gala prize, right? Like, here's your entrance thing, and then maybe work on it towards then. And they did that, I think, during the alpha strike or whatever it was. There's one of the previous ones where basically, as long as you do any contribution or even like just kill rats, you'll just accidentally your way into the first prize. And I think that that's really the way to do it.
All right. So before we get too far into telling CCP how to build stuff, how do people get involved with the stuff they did build?
Well, like I said, the sites appear all over the place. The agency now becomes your kind of command center for that. You can see the general Guardian Gala thing, which tells you what your points are, shows you what tasks you're in, and you can pin your tasks to your kind of your UI in the upper left if you want to keep track of the task for whatever reason. You can only see sites that are in the same system as you. So this is definitely a wander around and go find them.
Okay. Well, that's cool. The I actually want to get involved with this stuff. I know Dirk McGurk's been getting involved with it. He has some issues with it, I think. He can explain. He's in chat there. I'm going to tell you guys that if Killer Bee looks kind of funny giving commands out and shouting and grimacing and stuff like that, it's because
I'm here now, by the way.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's the face of a block fleet commander at work.
We were literally just, you know, we was just doing a move up, so we're done now. Pretty good.
You're back in Tribute yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just arrived.
Actually, I'm not done. And this is not an ordinary drive. These are like massive titans. So I actually got chills looking at it with the sun reflecting off it. And it was like, I got the adrenaline rush of Eve again, which is kind of cool.
Keskora, do the Guardians Gala thing, Guardian Gala events spawn in wormhole space?
They do, quite frequently. We see
VIPs
all the time. Not the VIPs, as far as I know, just the regular ones. I was kind of surprised because we haven't seen the VIPs in wormholes. I don't know if they do spawn maybe just royally, but we haven't found any. And I was kind of surprised. I feel like usually wormhole space gets the same stuff as null and low with these kind of events. So I don't know if they're there and we're just not seeing them, but the regular sites spawn like all the time. Like we kill them and they spawn back right away.
Is there any interesting part about the gala sites that like make them worth doing? Because like I've run two or three in my Titan, and I actually got the rep range implant, which I guess is kind of cool. But like apart from that, what can you even get? Like a bunch of skins, and that's it. Can you get the pink skins in there?
No, you don't get the premium skins that you can purchase. But like I said, you can get the agency drugs, which are actually very effective. They're no drawback, either tank damage or something else. I can't remember. And there's three tiers of them. And then there's the cerebral accelerators. There's three types of cerebral accelerators. There's one that gives you plus 10 for a couple of days, depending on what your biology is. There's one that gives you plus 12, depending or for a period of time. But then there's one that gives you plus 10 for, I think, 2 to 3 times longer than the other ones. It's called the drip feed. It's the most rare one. And for those of you who are playing the home game and trying to strategize how this all works, what that means is that every day, except for the last day, the advanced accelerators are obviously better than the normal accelerators because it's worth more. But on that last day, when the accelerators expire, if you slam a drip feed, that will last way past the actual end of the event or past when they will expire. So it's just like your skill queue. If you inject it at the expiration date, it'll keep going.
Interesting.
Mike, one question was, do the VIP woods actually have VIP in the name? How do you tell that it's a VIP site?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch.
Do the VIP woods that spawn in low and null, do they actually have VIP in the name?
Actually have VIP in the overview.
Do they have a champagne room?
No, they just have a carrier inside, but it dies to one doomsday, so it was pretty easy.
Yeah, I didn't realize you could run them in a Titan. I just logged in my Titan. I'm going to go find one and blow it up.
Yeah, it's also worth noting that the implant that drops is actually called Eros, which is, of course, the god of love. And Guardian Gala is the Valentine's Day event. We have confirmed from CCP that we are now basically doing holidays. So we now know that Crimson Harvest is Blood Raiders. It is Halloween. Guardian Gala is Angels kind of / Serpentis. It is Valentine's Day. The next one will be the Hunt, which is the Garistus money. Like they're locking in these seasons.
Don't know how I feel about that. What do you think?
Well, okay. So like from an immersive point of view, it is very gamey, right?
Yeah.
Cause you know, seasons remind you that it's the real world and not their world. On the other hand, pretty much every MMO does it, but it also allows for a pretty regular cadence. We were talking about this before, the podcast, where what I think that should happen is at the beginning of the event, there should be a full screen notification. Like anybody who's played, I hate to say this because of course everybody's going to freak out, but like anybody who's played free-to-play games that like have the big notification the first time you log in or whatever that tells you that something big is going on. I think that each event should have something like that, just like the email that they send out, but just be like, hey, here's the Guardian Gala. Here are the different things going on in the Guardian Gala. And then you could also sneak in other news like Upwell 2.0 in that sort of thing. And then, you know, just have it show up once and then like have a thing where they can uncheck it if they, or check a thing that makes it so that they don't, if they don't want to be notified by those things anymore, then they don't have to be. But
I think it does have it. On the upper left, just underneath the system and your navigation path, it has that schmutz about the Guardian Gala. It has something there and you have to like squeeze it every time.
Well,
it's also on the login screen.
Real quick, how do you guys feel? We'll go around the board. Just no big explanation, but just tell me, how do you feel about seasons and that kind of stuff in EVE?
I like having some kind of regular events. I think that's kind of fun.
But related to holidays? Related to real holidays? Does it?
I mean, at the end of the day, we do live in the real world. So having things that tie
trying to get away from the real world.
Yeah, but with holidays, I don't know. It gives something a little bit more feasible for you to think about as far as timing. Like, it's not just like some random thing. It's like, oh, there's a reason for this, and we can tie it in our real life into the game. So I don't really mind that at all.
What about you, Tuzzy?
I am 100% for it. I love it. There's a few things that I'm have strong feelings about. One is I hate wormhole. Sorry.
We hate you too.
Yeah, I don't like wormholes. They should have never been added to the game. I just detest all things having to do with wormholes. I also hate lore. I don't give a shit about lore. I don't care. I want pretty skins that I want to buy that make my ship look cool. I don't care that the Mimitar wouldn't have skins that don't look like baby diarrhea for whatever stupid lore reason. I don't care. I just want pretty skins that make my cool ship look cool. I don't care about lore.
We can just delete all wormhole space and just give you all of it for skins.
Pink skins, like purple a great skins, idea. Rainbow skins, no wormholes would be a much better Eve.
Good thing that there's enough Eve for all of us.
Right.
I will say that if you are interested in the lore, there is a very interesting caveat to kind of the way what they've done in the lore early on to fix other problems, which is there is this notion that basically the culture of Earth was kept insofar as like archaeological digs have discovered basic things. And so a lot of cultural phenomena of Earth remain in New Eden, even if they have been divorced from their original meaning, which is why we still use AU. It's why all of our ships are named after old Earth gods and other terminology. It's because we've maintained this culture. We've kept these pieces of culture from an archaeological point of view. So it's not that against the lore that they would pick these periods of time that were historically valuable.
And doesn't a New Eden that has holidays feel more real to you than a New Eden that doesn't have any holidays?
Yeah, I'm from California. We don't have any seasons.
We don't have seasons.
I hope they don't waste any of the dev time they have on some season crap. Like, don't get me wrong, but there's really more important issues than adding some fancy lunar love or whatever event. Like,
let's be clear. The reason why events are really great is because if you do them right, it allows you to experiment and iterate in a very logical way. A really good example is the experiment that they did a couple years back with the 10,000 SP for killing the first thing. If they had tied that to an event, then they would have been able to learn that and it would have been far less confusing to the player base. Other video games have already caught on to this, including Eve Valkyrie. the events, which are weekend wormholes, allow them to experiment with the rules of how things work. And in the same way, these Guardian Gala sites clearly have a version of AI, which we haven't necessarily seen before. They're not quite diamond rats, but they're certainly not old rats. So see them experimenting with content.
So you're saying by making these events, it's kind of like they're making spin-off products that'll work for other things.
Also, right. The guy that's designing this stuff is pulling people away from some of the areas of the game that have the problems you're thinking about, Killa. So he's reducing the stress on that part of the game. At the same time, he probably doesn't have the skill set to address those things, and other people need to be doing that. I don't see this as detracting from the zero-sum game you're picturing.
Okay.
Yeah, CCP Dragon is new. Like, CCP Dragon was brought on now that the event system is basically enough that somebody can be working on events. They brought on a new guy that's basically managing this, and he's been working on it since the Drifter event where we had to go get the Trinary Relics.
Yeah, I remember we did a nice interview with him.
It seems like also every time one of these seasonal events come out, they add some new skins or new something to the New Eden store that is like cosmetic stuff that doesn't impact gameplay in any way, but brings money into CCP because someone wants to buy skins. That's great. You know, whatever they want to do to sell things that's cosmetic, like you may not, someone may not appreciate a skin, don't care about it. But for every 20 people that do and buy those skins or buy Plex to buy the skins, that's bringing money into CCP. That's good for the game.
We can see the diversity here, right? Like it's great. Right. It's good that EVE is a big enough game for many, many different personalities and stuff like that. We're going to move on to a couple more things before we go. We have a neat announcement at the end of the show, a couple actually. But we're going to talk about the departure of Torfi Franz, CCP Torfi Franz, who was, for old players, he's a big, big, big personality because he's the guy that would come out and tell us all about the new stuff and we'd get super hyped up and stuff. But Torfi has left. And he's working now with Minecraft and Microsoft. I'm super sad to see him go. Carneros, what can you tell us about him? You worked with him. Can't hear you. Need to press, I think.
Oops. Yeah. Thank you. He's really, really smart, a little bit eccentric, very creative. He was one of the very early guys. In the days when there were 20 people working at CCP and sometimes sleeping under their desks and working long, long hours, and when they... when they had the keys to the bar across the street and could sometimes go in there after hours and let off some steam. Those were in those very early days Torvi was around. And he grew with EVE for a long time. And when I first arrived at CCP, he was a creative director on EVE Online. He was a deep influence. At one point, he shifted out of that role and sort of went into a sort of an IP development / biz dev role, ended up moving out to New York City where a lot of licensing work happens and moved in with the biz dev guy. And they had a little tiny mini office in New York that no one ever remembered. I only ever saw it from video conferencing. At one point...
EVE got into the museum there. They did a whole... the MoCA did an exposition...
Was involved in that.
Yeah.
At one point, the other biz dev guy left, and he was covering it himself. And then at one point, he sort of said, "I'd rather work from home," and moved out to Washington State. Was living out on the West Coast, which is a challenge because that's 8 hours behind Iceland. So it's a challenge to overlap as much as you can. I'm an early bird, so it's easier for me than some people. But and that's how he got to meet the Microsoft guys. And Tuesday he starts at Microsoft on the Minecraft products.
Well, that's cool.
It makes me wonder what his wife is doing though, because she's a relatively well-known Icelandic politician back home, or was when I met her. I don't know if she's moved out. I just wonder. None of my business. I'll shut up.
Somewhat related to Torfi, if anyone still hasn't done so and you ordered your floating Nyx, that is officially terminated, so you can get your money back.
The thing looked so dangerous when Torfi was showing me at eVegas. He was like, he's like, watch this. And he was wrestling with that magnet and it kept snapping. And I thought he was going to like knock a finger off. And I was like, it's okay, man. You don't have to show me. It's all right.
It was really cool. But yeah, like if the magnet was off at all, it just slammed onto the platform because it was, you know, being held there by fields.
Well, and this is a mixed result for CCP because he doesn't seem to have been that involved lately. He would come on and talk about the books. That's Torfi would come on and talk about the books and the merchandise and stuff like that. But he really, before, I mean, back in 2008, 2009, he was the guy that would come out and talk about, you know, all the great things that were going to happen and stuff. So yeah, it's interesting because I think he means a lot to older players. And I think he endeared himself with older players because they were buying that vision that he was, you know, saying in Karna and, you know, getting out of your ship and just all the stuff that he was putting out there. People were eating up the future vision. And that was kind of late in his tenure. So yeah, he means a lot to a lot of the older players, including myself. But I think the newer players probably don't even know who he is. Like, you know, they're all about Seagull and Fozzie and all that.
I know a lot of bitter players that are not terribly unhappy that he's gone.
No, I hear that too. And I think it's mixed, but he's a sentimental favorite for me. I always said Eve would be Eve as long as Torfi was there, but that was more of like a projection of how I started and what, you know, what that meant to me.
It really goes back to, you know, like, I guess if nothing else, there's a lot of player perception. It, regardless of whether or not it's true, there's a player perception that the upper echelons of EVE or of CCP are where the real fundamental kind of problem is. And Torfi definitely represents that upper echelon. So a lot of people will lightning rod to that regardless of anything.
And being in a creative role at a company for 19 years, I don't know. Strikes me as a little bit of a refresher might be good for someone.
Yeah, I am happy for him. Not just the winning Eve part, right? But the just like, do you really want your career to be about one company? Not really. I wouldn't. But
he was basically a kid when he joined that company.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you want to look back at your life and not see something so permanent. It's one of the problems I actually have with playing this game for a decade. Is I look back at it, it's just too permanent. It's like a second wife kind of thing.
Additionally, I mean, being offered a position on the Minecraft team is, I mean, under the best of conditions, it's hard to let go or give up.
Yeah. Well, okay. Anyway, so we got a really cool announcement, and this is a surprise to me because it came together so quickly, thanks to one of our members here, Keskora, who's amazing and brilliant and just really did an amazing job with something we'll show you next. We have a new website, and this is for Talking in Stations to consolidate all our work. Let's see if we can put that up. It's actually talkinginstations.com. Should be easy to remember. Can we see that, McLeod? There you go. Yeah, so anyway, this is a new website. It'll have all the audio programs on it going back to the beginning, and we will get all the video products on it as well. I call it products, but basically the shows. I think it's really cool.
This looks pretty good. As a web developer, I approve.
Well, thank you.
This was, she and I worked on it together. It was 90% her work. I just helped her where I could. And we're going to put all the stuff up here. So if you ever miss a show, ever want to see it, we've had the problem of broadcasting on INN, which we'll continue to do. But, you know, the videos are on their site. The videos are on their Twitch. The audio is on, SoundCloud. And so it's all over the place. We're all over the place. And our only real identity was Discord, where we lived, which you can join from this site. But now we have a Talking in Stations website, which will have the shows. It'll have all the special programming. It'll show how you can subscribe to the stuff that we do. And it will also show the crew, as you can see there, who they are, the regulars. We'll also put in more stuff as we go. But for now, it's a minimal delivery that's totally complete. And just super happy. Thank you, Keskor, for putting that together.
Yay. Well, I'm glad to be able to contribute. If I will say that if anybody has any feedback to give on the site, or if something doesn't work for any reason, I made a new channel in Discord called Website Feedback. So just feel free to hop in there and give me all the comments you have. This is something we're going to be continuing to work on for a long time. I mean, is, you know, with web, you can change it anytime. So if you, if there's something that you really want to see on it, or if you're having problems navigating it for some reason or anything like that, just let me know. Give me all of your requests and I will do my best to keep it developed and keep it running smoothly and everything.
The main five things I look for when I look for a podcast website, you've got them all there. So I don't.
Yay.
Like, awesome. Show notes, RSS feed, Android podcast link, Apple podcast link. That's pretty, I mean, bare minimum what you want, what you need. It needs to be on the front page and easy to find.
And it's got a really cool player if you want to play it there, where you can skip ahead 15 seconds and all that stuff, which is good.
I want to get ahead of the ball here and say that I provided a picture with just a green screen and they put the Amar background on.
Yeah.
It wasn't my choice.
Sorry, we had, it's like bunny ears behind Astaroth. So we're in a process of transitioning to our third year and we're looking for advice from you guys. We want to know what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. So we're putting out a survey. You can see that in chat. I'll just read that it's surveymonkey.com/r, just like Eve writes R Eve. So it's surveymonkey.com/r/, here it is, capital ZKH3P99. That's your code for the survey. For podcasters, I'm putting it out verbally so that you can go to this survey and fill it out and let us know how you feel about the show. Not if it's good or bad, but basically, is it meeting the needs? What guests do you like? What panelists do you like? What are the, are you looking for topics? Are you looking for interviews? What are you looking for? Because we want to gain perspective from the outside. It's hard once you do the show for a long time to figure out, like, are we really doing it right? You can tell by the numbers we get, but we'd like to actually make something a little more research friendly. So again, that is surveymonkey.com/r/ZKH3P99. And here it is in chat. Fill it out, peoples.
We love our metrics.
All right. I think we're pretty much done. Let me see if there's a couple more things that we can cover real quick. And that is out of Eve stuff. Who put this in? The Dubai bank fell for real life double your money scam.
Not it.
Who did that? Oh, McLeod. Thank you. All right. So a news item there. Dubai bank fell for real life double your money scam. Sounds like Eve in real life.
Oh, so like Cheetah Local, double your risk, but an actual bank fell for it.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Did Elon Musk did something about that a couple weeks ago too? Like when he launched the car into the air, like he did a bit, not a Bitcoin, but Eternium coin. He said, the first so many people that give me this much Eternium coin, I'm going to give you back some back. Legitimately did that.
The other thing is, and this is interesting because he is from NC dot, the Norwegian downhill silver medalist at the Olympics is actually a member of NC dot in the HER Corporation. I forget his name, but he's a very accomplished winter Olympian. I believe he's sixth in history on how decorated he is, but he is a member of HER in NC dot. So congratulations to him. And I think that brings this, brings the episode to a close. I want to thank Killa B for joining us and Tuzzy as well. Any last words or things that you can't put away? All right, then.
Keep an eye on Zekiel this week. More citadels are going to die.
Amen.
Excellent. And for you guys that are watching the stream, thanks for watching. You guys, I'll put that link in there one more time for a survey. We are also have a new website, talkinginstations.com. Visit it. And for those of you that are listening on podcast, that is surveymonkey.com/r/ZKH3P99. And most importantly, we have an announcement for next week, which is we are going to have the security team from CCP here. So that would be CCP Guard, who's going to be with them. But we're also going to have Peligro on live, along with another member from the CCP security team. So we're going to talk about how to safeguard your account. Maybe we'll talk about some botting issues and all that stuff next week here on Talking in Stations. And finally, want to say, can somebody read out who we're thankful to?
Well, Yes, I will. Thank you very much to Rockburn, to Sadis07, by the way, 36 months, 3 years. Way to go. Amazing. H2O for Sexton, something like that. Thank you. And Dinozix, thank you very much, 4 months in a row.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
And again, our Patreon supporters as well.
Yes. Patreon supporters, super helpful. That's what's making the site possible. It's what's making new technology that we're testing possible. All these accounts get paid for out of that fund. And one last thing, the security team guys we're going to have are CCP Peligro and CCP Grimy. So sorry, I forgot that.
Grimy,
depending on what country you're from. Right, so we'll see them next week. That's all we have for this week.
Bye, everybody.
We'll see you again next week on Talking In Stations.